Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Hump Day. Today is Wednesday, April 13th. Hi, Kelsey.
Hey. It is Hump Day.
Yeah. You sit lower again. Somebody lowered your chair. Do you know how to bring it up a little bit?
Sure, so I do.
So I can see you a little better, because you're like hiding under the table there. There you are. You see? Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. We're going to have a great show today. We have a phone guest. We're going to talk about an interesting film. And Kelsey, the only question remains whether he'll call in or we have to call him.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of like... It wasn't conclusive.
Right.
Know?
Oh, yeah. No. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. So that'll happen in a few minutes. It's been a while since we didn't have a studio guest, right? It seems like the past 2 weeks we had somebody every day.
Oh my gosh, yeah. We've been like on a roll with it.
Exactly. And we've had some great people on the show. And you guys should definitely catch some past shows and stuff. So yesterday you were out. Leah filled in for you. But you... You went and you had like a big deal thing yesterday. So tell us what it was.
Yeah, I was shooting a commercial for Porsche in...
For Porsche, the German car?
Yes. Oh, wow. Yes.
And you get to be near one or drive one?
I got to drive one.
Oh, wow. Excuse me.
One of the 911s.
Really?
I know. And it was kind of bizarre because while we were filming, this guy walked in and... this Asian guy walked in and bought like literally a $1 million Porsche.
Really?
Yeah, it was crazy.
A million dollar Porsche.
Yeah, it was bizarre.
Wow.
I know.
And so what was it, like a dealership or something? Is that where you were? Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. It was a we were filming on location. So,
I see.
Because they wanted the showroom and all of that to kind of be in the background so that it was like real setting or whatever. But it's a company called Rusnak.
And they're out here in Westlake or...
They're everywhere,
Westlake,
yeah. Right. They have...
Pasadena, oh, so they opened
Westlake.
New... Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, they have like so many locations. So.
Yeah, I had bought a BMW from them some time ago, so I know they have like luxury cars.
They do.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was fun. They're
so
really nice.
So what was the commercial about? What did you have to do in it?
I read off of a teleprompter. So basically, I was a presenter.
Okay.
Which came really naturally from my news anchoring days. But it was so funny because I never noticed that I need glasses until I have to do something like read a teleprompter. And then I'm like, can you make it bigger?
Really?
And thicker? Yeah. So they had to make it pretty big.
So you don't have like contacts or anything?
I don't, because my vision isn't that bad.
Right.
But it doesn't, I mean.
But it's hard for you to read at a distance?
At a long distance, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, you need like 20/20 vision to pretty much read teleprompters anyways. Because
that's
you're,
true, right?
You know, sitting pretty far from them and everything. But they made it a size that was readable for me. So
oh, really?
It was
good.
But I couldn't believe it. I was like, dang it. Because, you know, day to day. I don't notice it. It doesn't cause me an issue.
Yeah.
But anyways, I think last time I went to the eye doctor, my vision was like negative 0.75 or
which is small.
Yeah, it's very small.
Yeah.
But it does make a difference when you're like trying to read from far away. So.
Right. What about driving? It doesn't bother you to drive?
It doesn't.
Anything? Really?
No,
oh,
it
cool.
doesn't. Yeah.
Okay, so you're at a point still where you don't need it. Hopefully it won't get any worse, but usually vision does.
Usually
you know?
It does. Yeah. Usually it
does. I mean,
does.
I started having to wear distance glasses from when I was about 25 or so, I think.
You know, that's really funny it happened to you like that, too, because that's how it happened to me. And
really?
I thought that it was one of those things that happened when you were young. If you're going to be nearsighted, which means you can't see far,
right.
then it's going to happen when you're going through puberty, essentially, is what happens to most people. And me, I was fine. And then my junior or senior year in college, I started noticing that, like, I couldn't see writing on the board and stuff as easily.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I ended up going to the eye doctor and I asked the ophthalmologist, I said, you know, this is bizarre. Why is this happening to me at 22?
Right.
And she said, well, you know, sometimes it happens.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with age, really. I mean, I know that people that read a lot like me or people that I know tend to wear glasses too, you know, because you really strain your eyes a lot.
Right.
When you read and stuff. But so, I mean, have you considered glasses at least for certain occasions? Like if you drive?
Right. I have glasses.
Oh,
I
you do?
Have glasses.
Okay.
But I don't have contacts, so.
Right. Yeah.
I should get those.
I know. So when you drive, though, you don't use your glasses or anything, right?
No.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I don't.
It's amazing, though, how.
I passed the DMV test. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. Okay. Good for you.
So
yeah, because some people don't realize that, you know, I mean, I know somebody whose vision is not that great, but they refuse to wear glasses. And when they do, they're like, wow, the whole world opens up. I'm like, yeah, just get glasses, you know?
Yeah. Oh, you should totally do it if it's a big issue, but
and exactly,
it's
and
unsafe,
I think,
you know, but
yeah, and I think many people look good in glasses. It's not like it, you know. It's something that has to concern someone with their look or anything, you know.
Right.
I just hate them because I you know, they're like another thing you have to worry about.
Right. I don't mind glasses at all either. It's just that, you know, when I work, they didn't hire me with glasses. You know?
Yeah, that's
so they don't,
true.
Yeah, so they,
no,
they don't want
No, that's true,
glasses.
Absolutely, yeah.
So
and besides, while you're working, you don't need to. You know, if you notice, there's a lot of actors and actresses who wear glasses in day-to-day life, but they don't in their roles, you know.
Right. It just becomes an issue when there's, like, a teleprompter involved or something. But... You know, maybe I'll get kind of an emergency set of contacts to wear backup for when I have jobs like that.
That's true, yeah. But the reason I don't wear contacts a lot is because it helps me see far, but then close I can't see shit with it, you know. So when I have glasses, I just take them off when I look close. Like right now, when we do the show, I don't need my glasses because I wouldn't be able to see the computer screen.
Exactly.
It would be too blurry.
I see.
So if I had contacts, I would just sit here and everything would be blurry to me except you because you're at a distance. But
right.
The computer, I wouldn't be able to read it. So it's kind of irritating to wear contacts. So I just don't wear them, you know. But I don't have a choice, you know.
Well, you know, my mom got LASIK.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Really, huh? I know, but I heard, but they're saying it's still going to be the same thing. If they fix my sight for a distance, I won't be able to see close. So can you imagine if that's like permanent? I mean, at least with my glasses, I take them off, I can see close. Here, I'll never be able to see close. I'll need glasses to see close.
You don't have like the aged eye problem where it's like you can't usually when you turn like 45 or 50 you can't see close.
No, that's not what it is.
I can see
close.
Can't see far away.
Exactly. But when I get the glasses to see far away, they affect the close things.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, because it's focusing on the distance, so when it's close I have to take them off. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah, so it's a pain in the ass.
That is a pain. You know,
but imagine if I do LASIK and I will permanently be able to see far, but not close. I would die if just my natural vision, I could not see
close.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, but you know when it drives me the craziest is when I go to a bookstore because I have to have my glasses to browse. Then when I pull out a book to read it, I have to take them off and all this stuff. So it's like a pain in the ass, you know.
Yeah.
But what can you do? You know, at least they invented glasses. I mean, we could be walking around not being able to see shit, right?
Can you imagine? Oh, my God.
But isn't it amazing how just the curvature of glass can improve your vision and everything, you know? And like in binoculars, it makes everything seem closer.
Oh, it's so cool.
And things like that, right? And it's just the curvature of the lenses. So it's amazing. It's just the way the light goes.
Yeah.
I know. I like stuff like that. I love physics, man.
Yeah,
it's amazing to me. I mean, my son is taking biochemistry now.
You told me that. That's pretty cool.
Now, both biology and chemistry, I'm not into. But so combining it both, I don't know. I hope he knows what he's doing.
Oh, my God. That actually sounds like
but
a nightmare.
It's hard.
To me.
Yeah. He says the classes are hard.
I like third grade physics.
Yeah, right?
That's what I like. I don't like that complicated stuff. Cool. Yeah.
I know. Once you get into all the formulas and stuff, my God, you know.
I hated that. And calculus was not a friend of mine.
Yeah, calculus. And nobody uses calculus unless you're a scientist or something, you know. I mean, what is it? To measure curves? Who cares, you know?
I know.
Yeah.
And they tell it, and you know, you said, it's so funny in retrospect because you look back on all the high school days when you were stressing about your calculus grade. And it's like, goodness, I haven't used that 2 seconds since I've been out of school.
And they talk about it. They talk about some courses that are not, that shouldn't be taken at school because they're not relevant anymore.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the thing is, I think for some professions it is relevant, but it's just it's so bizarre. And that's why I think we should do what some other countries do and pick a general path maybe a little bit early on, because like I have no business sitting in AP calculus class
right,
like no business whatsoever. But I had to. So
I know that's a waste of time.
I agree, basics everybody should know, obviously,
right?
But when you get up into the advanced stuff,
I just
don't see why everybody has to go through that torture.
It is torture, yeah.
It is. And, you know, you just can't wrap your brain around it, and it's like, what's wrong with me? I'm so stupid.
Wow. So cool. Can you talk about what the commercial was about? I mean, so you were were like a presenter or something on the commercial, right?
Exactly.
In the commercial.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you were introducing something or
well, I was that? Actually I was. Yes. I was talking about the Porsche aftermarket products.
Okay.
And they just I believe got like two new, like a Ghost Shield and a tire and wheel repair, you know, which are two aftermarket products that they're pushing. And so I talked about that. That's kind of what the copy was about and the advantages of it and what it does to maintain the resale value of your investment and all that kind
of
stuff.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, when you told me a Porsche commercial, I was envisioning you driving with a handsome guy with a topless Porsche.
Well, we actually
your hair
did
is in the air
do that, okay, which is funny that you mentioned that, yeah.
Okay, so, but hold on a second because our guest is calling in, so we're going to take the call first, and then we'll get back to the Porsche conversation. And we're going to be joined by John Finch. John, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for calling in, John. I wasn't sure whether you guys got my email to call in, so I had your number ready to call you just in case. So,
Absolutely.
But I'm glad we were able to communicate. And the funny thing was is that somehow our email ended up with another radio host, and I thought he was you writing to me. And it was like a whole confusion thing about who's writing to whom. And it was funny. So I think it was precipitated by the PR company, but it just turned out to be a funny thing. So, but the important thing, John, is we have you on the line. Where are you calling us from this morning?
Dallas, Texas.
Oh my gosh, I'm from Texas.
Yeah, there you go. Kelsey's from Texas. So
there you go. Another Lone Star girl, huh?
Yes, the Big D. I'm from San Antonio. I went to the University of Texas at Austin, so I'm in that neck of the woods, but I like Dallas too.
Yeah. John, have you lived in Dallas all your life?
Pretty much. I've been here most of my life. We moved here when I was about 3, and as they say in Texas, you know, I wasn't born here. I was actually born in Mississippi, but I got here as quick as I could.
We do say that.
That's a good one. Wow. So, very interesting. So, John, so we're going to talk to you about your film. You created a short film, right? And
yes.
And the film is called The Father Effect. It's interesting making a film in Dallas where everybody comes to Hollywood or New York to do this, or the East Coast. What prompted you to actually make a film like this?
Well, actually, the film is kind of a chronicle of my story of growing up without a dad. My dad committed suicide when I was 11, and really up until about 5 years ago, I just kind of wandered through life without that father figure. And really struggled in growing up without a dad, especially as a young boy, a teenager, and even a single man and father. So not having that affirmation and that confirmation from a man and knowing what a quote-unquote real man is, you know, I just kind of bought into everything that that TV and Hollywood tells you a man is, you know, which is mm-hmm. You're supposed to be strong all the time, and you can't show any real emotion. You can't admit you have struggles, and really just kind of bought into all of the success, money, power, and all of those things. So it's really just a story about my struggles. And now I have three daughters and yeah. trying to father them and walking through the journey of that. And so it's really a message about forgiveness and healing also. I found forgiveness from my dad about 5 years ago, and it radically changed my life as a man, husband, and dad.
So you're saying that something like that can really weigh heavily on you until you sort it out in your own head, pretty much.
Absolutely, yeah. I had never understood or even heard the term father wound, and this is a term that's become a little more, a little more known in the last several years. But it's, you know, I had this deep father wound of abandonment. I couldn't understand why my dad would choose to leave me and our family, and so I covered that wound up through medication and alcohol. I was I had become a social alcoholic and was traveling all over the country, and it was kind of the perfect storm and something that wasn't good for my marriage or my family.
Right.
Yeah. So you decided to do something about it. So this haunted you for obviously since your childhood and everything. So you must have had like a long process of healing that you had to go through yourself.
I did. I had a process of, you know, it's one of those things as a man, again, kind of this myth that I didn't want to admit I had this struggle or issue, and I thought I could just man up and suck it up and, you know, and work my way through it. But finally, I kind of said, okay, I've got to figure this thing out because it's starting to impact my family and my health and everything. And so I admittedly went to a counselor to see a counselor that really kind of helped me walk through that journey because, you know, as a guy, and I remember going to the counselor for the first time, I told my wife, I said, don't tell anybody I'm going to see a counselor. Because as men, that's just kind of, you know, we don't want people to think we're some kind of weirdo or crazy or whatever.
Right.
Exactly.
But I'm a huge advocate of counseling. I mean, if it wasn't for my counselor, I probably wouldn't be where I am today. And he really just asked me the questions that I needed to sort through and really process. And so at one point in one of those sessions, we came to this place where I just forgave my dad. And it literally just changed my life.
Yeah, yeah. You kind of let go, you know. And I can totally imagine because, you know, as children, we build all these walls around us to protect us, you know. And then you grow up and these walls become like your prison walls. And then so we have to come to terms with what we went through as children, I think, and let go of forgiveness and guilt and all these feelings, you know, because I think many people, I mean, I can totally see how a child would feel abandoned when the father, you know, takes their own lives, you know. So, I mean, that must have been like traumatic in itself when you were 11, when it happened.
It was, and, you know, to kind of add to the shame and the guilt and all of the other feelings that come along with that, I had found the gun that my dad killed himself with about 2 weeks before he did it.
Really?
And so there was that kind of emotion that came along with it, too. I was 11, I was playing around in his closet or in the bedroom, and all of a sudden I come upon this gun, and as a young boy, I'm like, wow. This is cool, you know. So started kind of just looking at it, and before I knew it, he was standing behind me, and in this very stern voice, just said, "Son, get out of here, and don't you ever tell anybody that you found this." So I kind of scurried away, and obviously I didn't put those two together until after the day that he had killed himself.
So you kind of felt guilty about it too, right? You had a certain guilt as though you could have avoided it or prevented it or something.
Yes, you know, I went through that whole range of emotions of, well, maybe if I'd have said something. Well, even beyond finding the gun, it was, as a child, it's, well, what did I do? what did I do that made him do what he did? You know, and so you kind of just try as an 11-year-old boy to process all of that, and it's quite a bit to process.
Yeah,
for anybody, let alone an 11-year-old.
Oh. Yeah,
absolutely.
So I imagine all this counseling you went through and everything led you to put a film together. Tell us a little bit about the film, the Father Effect. For those of you just joining us, we're talking to John Finch. He's the creator and storyteller of The Father Effect. It's a short film. I think the name is pretty self-explanatory, but do tell us a little bit about what we can expect from the film.
Sure. So the short film we launched on Father's Day of 2014, and it's kind of a brief story of that time period of my dad doing what he did, and then kind of the struggle of walking through life without that father, and there at the end eventually finding forgiveness and really how it impacted my life. The full length film we do now have completed, and we're shopping for distribution and talking to several groups about getting it released.
Oh, that's exciting.
And it's kind of an expanded version of the story. And there's a lot of messages for fathers. And in interviewing over 80 people for the film, you know, we interviewed a UFC champion, a rabbi, several best-selling authors, you name it. I mean, anything from a group of college students to an 84-year-old grandfather and everyone in between. And the messages in the film, the biggest difficulty in editing the film was trying to figure out what messages to leave out.
Right.
Because there's so many that we as fathers need to hear. And it was it's a great film. I really believe in the project. And really we made it because as I began to share more of my story with more people, it became very aware that everybody I was talking to, whether it was a woman or a man, had some type of father wound, and it's really an epidemic that was much more massive than I ever realized.
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting because, you know, I had a story. I mean, my story was totally different, and I think I should bring it up just briefly because I think being abandoned or feeling abandoned by a parent involves so many different ways of taking form. So you don't necessarily have to have a father that takes his own life for you to feel abandoned. You know, I mean, my parents sent me here out here from another country, when I was 16 years old, and to me it was like the greatest thing, you know, because at 16 it's like wow, you know.
Right.
But then later it sort of caught up with me, and I thought, wait a minute, you know, they sent me halfway across the world at 16.
Right. You're like, why would they do that?
Yeah. So I mean, that's abandonment, you know,
it is.
In a way,
sure.
You know. So although they only meant well, but only later on I found out how it affected me, and I had to work it out too. With both of them, you know, although it was my father's decisions mainly, you know, to sort of like send me here, get one foot in the door, and then they would join me afterward. But it was indeed, I mean, how many people send their 16-year-old alone across the world?
That's scary.
You know, I did stay with some relatives, but it was still, you're away from your family, from your friends. That age, you really need your roots, you know.
God, my parents are like, you're in California, come back.
Yeah, right?
Well, and you know what? I think, too, not only the physical, you know, difference in being physically separated from your children, but what I came to understand and know too is there's this big epidemic of fathers that are emotionally disconnected.
Oh, yeah.
They're the dads that are living right there in the home but are choosing to do other things rather than spend time with their kids. They're choosing to work extra hard and long hours and all of these things, putting work, you know, far beyond the priority of their families, and there's ones that are caught up in success and all of those things. And so you can have a dad that lives right there in the home but yet is still absent, if you will, and still causing a father wound because of being uninvolved and unengaged with his kids.
Mm. Right. Wow. So you guys can find out more about the film at the website thefathereffect.com. And this takes you to a website called theperfectfather.org, and there's information on the film. Now, so a little bit more about the film. So this is, you're billing this as stories about the impact of fathers. So it is a documentary, and you talk to different people and find out how their relationships were with their fathers, what a father meant to them.
Yes, yeah, so in all of the stories that we share, there's insight. In every one that we interviewed, there was a message that, you know, that I could take back and that I was learning about how I could be a better father. Mm. You know, obviously none of us are perfect. We all make mistakes, and I continue to screw up all the time. You know,
right.
So it's kind of learning to navigate that journey. And you know, one of the things I learned, probably one of the more valuable lessons, was to ask my kids for forgiveness when I messed up. You know, mm-hmm. if I lost my temper or cursed or said something I shouldn't have said, it was, you know, going and having one-on-one conversations with them after the fact and just talking to them and saying, you know what, Dad had a really bad day, or explain the situation and then ask them for forgiveness in that. And that's really brought me so much closer to my girls. Because they understand that, you know what, Dad's not perfect. He's doing the very best that he can. But it also lets them understand that they don't have to be perfect.
Yeah,
and so it was a really valuable lesson for me.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Awesome.
Like that.
How long did it take to put this together, John?
Well, we started in June, right after we started the short film in June 2014. We started on the full length, so it's been just about 2 years now, and it's been a longer journey than when we would have wanted.
Right, always is, right?
Not being a filmmaker to begin with, I just, you know, I wanted to tell the story, and so I just learned what to do and how to do it, and just started going out and talking to people. So that's how it began.
How did you go about filming? Did you hire a crew? Did you do it yourself? Editing, all of that stuff, the mechanics of it is perplexing to me.
Yeah, it was me and a camera initially.
Oh, wow.
We did on the reenactment piece for the 15 minutes, the 2 or 3 minute reenactment of the day my dad died, which is shown in the film.
Yeah.
We did actually work with a production group, a media group here out of Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Mm-hmm.
So that they helped us put that together to help us launch that. And then I kind of added the other 12 or 13 minutes and edited it. And just kind of, you know, it was I was thrown into the fire and figured it all out. So I've got a creative background. I love the editing part of it.
Oh, nice.
And the storytelling part. So it just kind of came together.
Yeah. And I can totally connect to this, you know, because it's like with me, it's also I'm self-taught about almost everything I do, you know, and we were just talking about going to college and everything. But the bottom line is sometimes you just have to do it on a shoestring and figure things out yourself, you know. And
yeah, absolutely.
That's just to make your dream come true. And I think you're a great example of this. And think about it. You're leaving a little legacy behind you that generations will always be able to watch and learn from. And that's the cool thing, I think, about films and books and things like that, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, the film is The Father Effect, John Finch. Tell us where people can find out more, how people can contact you if they wish to.
Sure. So just thefathereffect.com is our website. We also have places on social media. They can do at The Father Effect on Twitter, and we have The Father Effect movie on Facebook.
Okay,
awesome.
Great.
And you guys can find links to all those at thefathereffect.com. John Finch, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We wish you much success. Now, I did want to ask you, how can people actually see the film?
I mean,
how do you distribute it?
Well, we're still waiting right now. We're talking to several different distributors as far as whether it will be a theatrical release or how exactly we're going to go to market with the full length. Mm-hmm. They can watch the short film on our website, or we have a YouTube channel where we actually have the short film along with about 75 interview clips along the way that we've released. So they can see a lot of it there.
Wow. Sounds like a lot of stuff happening there. That's cool. You know, maybe we'll be able to watch the full length, you know, like on a Netflix or something, you know, that would be cool. You know.
Well, that's one, definitely one avenue we're looking at. And yeah. So we're actually starting this summer on The Father Effect 2, and it specifically deals with the struggles that men have in raising daughters.
My dad can relate. He has three daughters.
Yeah, exactly.
Three of us.
So it's the, you know, the struggles of that, and we're just going to kind of help men navigate those difficult roads and just try to encourage and inspire guys to men and fathers to stay in the battle and to stay engaged and do everything they can to keep getting better.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, you know, as a divorced father, I appreciate the time that I have with my kids. I highly recommend it to everyone, and you know, and I think, but you know, having, you know, going through a divorce and everything, I realized that fathers are very important in a kid's life. And the kids and the kid is important in the father's life,
of
you know.
Course.
I mean, and I always
Absolutely.
Missed that part of actually physically living with them because we divorced when they were rather young. But nevertheless, I always maintained that closeness, that contact with them, and it's helped a lot, you know. I mean, I think I've even not living with them, I've been able to instill values in them and so forth, you know. So I think for both daughters and sons, the father is very important. I think undervalued, underestimated in society, in today's society anyway, and which is baffling because we're a, you know, I don't know. I mean, we're not that kind of society, but yet men are sort of like often left in the dark. You know,
and you know what? We have a lot of divorced fathers, and the key there is just when you're with your kids, just be with your kids. You know, just be engaged and involved, and enjoy the time you have with them. I mean, you know, for men to truly understand, for fathers to truly understand that to a daughter, they are, you know, setting that standard by which their daughter will measure every other man.
Exactly.
It's so true. And every guy I date, too, I'm like, oh, my dad would never do that. You are done.
Yeah. And you know what? For a son, that father is setting the standard by which he'll measure himself as a man.
Right.
So it's so vitally important. And that's, again, the message that we're trying to convey to people is really the fathers really truly understand the significant and lifelong impact they have on their kids.
Right. No, absolutely. You know, I mean, my firstborn is a girl, and, you know, we had like the best time, you know. I mean, I was so into it, and but you know what, based on the guys he's bringing home, I'm not so sure she learned a lot from me, but no, I'm kidding.
You know what, if I can, I'll share just a quick story with you. If you having a daughter, you'll truly, this was another one of the wow moments for me. We interviewed a Dr. Meg Meeker, who's a best-selling author, and she's a pediatrician by trade.
Uh-huh.
And been doing pediatrician work for 20 plus years. And she said, John, several times I've had little 13, 14 year old girls come in my office, and they would check out and everything's fine. But before they would leave, she would say, they would ask, hey, can you give me a note or a prescription? And she would say, well, what do you need that for? You're totally fine. Everything checks out. And she said, I don't care what it is, but just give me something that says cannot have sex.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, John, what these girls were doing, these little 13, 14-year-old girls, they were having sex. It wasn't emotionally or physically pleasurable, but it was the only positive affection and attention they were getting from a boy.
Wow.
They weren't getting it from their fathers.
Right. So,
this was their permission slip to go tell Johnny, hey, I can't have sex anymore.
Yeah. Wow. So you really, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So
wow.
you've got to provide your daughter with what she needs, which when early on the love and the attention and everything, so she doesn't have to look for it elsewhere. You know,
She, you know, you're that role model for what she expects every man to be.
Yeah.
Setting that benchmark very high, right. Setting that standard high is you know is it. That you do the best you can to set that benchmark high.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, John Finch, congratulations on the film, on both the short and the long versions. People can find out more, like we said, at thefathereffect.com. You can contact John and I suppose... did you have like a team pretty much? Do you have a couple of people that worked with you, or did you pretty much, the short one, did on your own?
I did the majority of my own on my own. I did have a videographer from time to time that I would hire to come along with me to do various interviews. But for the most part, I put together the thing on my own. So it's
very impressive.
It was quite the journey. I could probably write a book just on that itself.
Yeah,
what I learned.
But. I know, The Making of the Father Effect. There you go.
Yeah.
All right, John. Thank you so much, John. Give our best to all of Texas. It's funny how sometimes, you know, it's like it depends on, you know, when people talk to you, like if you're in Texas, people ask you where you're from. You're going to give a name of a city. But when you're asked, you know, from another state where you're from, they say Texas. And it's like, oh, so say hi to everybody in Texas. But wait a minute, you know, there's a few million there.
Right.
So it's Texas is not that cozy. You know what I'm saying?
It's a big place.
It's a huge state.
So, we are our own country, more or less. And that's what I like to think anyway.
I know. John, thank you. All the best to you and your family, and much success. And come back when the long version is done, and we'll talk more about it.
Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate it.
Of course. Take
thank
care.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I like talking about fathers. I think it's important. It's an important thing, you know. I mean, it touches me in many ways. And I mean, I remember when, like in my 30s, those were like the hardest years for me because I hadn't discovered at the time, but I had like bipolar like symptoms and stuff like that.
Okay.
You know, I would get like agitated and angry. And like constantly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was my thing. It wasn't the thing of like going shopping and not sleeping for nights.
Right.
But for me, it was just like a lot of agitation all the time, a lot of depression and things like that. So so it was tough time. And that's also when my kids were born, and when I was in my early 30s. So I had to take like a break from life for at least a year, you know, and because people could see I was not functioning anymore because I couldn't handle my divorce, you know. It was like I had got divorced and all that stuff, and I just couldn't bear to think, how am I going to live without my kids, you know? How can I have my kids taken away from me? Why are they not paying attention to what the fathers want? Why don't I get like an equal chance with a mother to ask for custody, you know?
Right.
But everybody told me, don't bother. Fathers never get custody. Rarely.
Rarely.
You know, I mean, if the mother is okay and she's not a criminal or a psycho or something,
right,
she's going to get the kids.
Yeah.
So that started an uphill battle for me. But all I can tell you is I took a year's break. I went to Israel, lived with my folks a little bit.
Oh,
you
nice.
Know, worked, grew spiritually quite a bit. You know, I studied the Kabbalah for a year.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, but not in a religious way, more of like in a practical way, how to improve your life and everything,
right,
understanding things. So I grew there, and then I met somebody from South Africa, and I felt I wasn't ready to come back and conquer my demons in LA yet. You know, I had just bad memories.
Right.
But I missed my kids, so it was like the biggest dilemma ever. What
right.
do I do, you know? And how do I go back to what to me still seemed like hell? Because I did go through hell here for a while, but you know, at the expense of not seeing my kids.
Exactly.
So, but I wasn't ready yet, so I moved to South Africa for another year. So that was 2 years away. But all I can tell you is every day I had pictures of my kids on my refrigerator and everywhere. And I would just cry every day just looking at the pictures.
When you were in South Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, looking at the pictures and stuff. Because, I mean, think, this was before the internet. This was before. I'm talking about early 90s. There was no internet. I had to call them. And even phone calls were like extremely expensive from Johannesburg to L.A. So I had to call from pay phones and stuff with coins and shit. I mean, I can't even tell you how it used to be a long time ago, you know. But and plus they were, let's see, they were about 6 and 3. I mean, how much did they understand on the phone when he talked to them, you know?
Exactly.
You know, especially my three-year-old. It's like, who is this person called Dad that I'm supposed to like, that my sister likes so much because she remembered me more than he did.
Yeah.
So that sucked.
Oh, I know.
So that was a hard time, but all I'm saying is fathers are important. To me, fatherhood has always been very important. Even now that my kids are grown and I've had to sort of adjust to the fact that they're independent now, you know?
Right.
But my son is coming in tonight. He's going to go to Coachella.
Oh, hi.
Yeah, have you been to Coachella?
No.
I know. They say it's pretty cool, actually.
I've heard that.
I know, but it's very expensive, too.
Yeah. How much does it take?
$400 per weekend. And
what?
They do it over 2 weekends.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. I mean, yeah, I'm like,
so relaxing. Is he going both weekends?
No, I think just one.
Oh, okay.
Just this
you
weekend.
You could probably get your fix from just one.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, that's a lot of money anyway
to
do something like that. But I guess it's memorable, you know. If you can save up when you're a young kid, you can save up for something like that. Why not? You know, go
exactly.
Enjoy yourself.
Exactly. He'll never forget it.
Yeah. See, I want to go to Burning Man, you know.
Yeah.
Have you heard of Burning Man?
I have. Yeah.
One sounds like pretty much fun.
It does.
Too. So we'll see. I think I owe it to myself to try at least once.
That'd be a good fit for you, I think.
Yeah, like
you'd
to live
like
in the desert, you know. With all the potheads in the world and stuff. God. Wow. Yeah, that would be cool. When is it? Usually like what, in August or something?
I'm not sure when it is.
But this time I better be prepared, you know. Like my daughter, she's like, I'm dying to go to Comic-Con. I said, I can't believe it. I got like requests, like notices to apply for a press pass a few months ago, and I just ignored it, and now I'm trying to get it for her, and it's like, sorry, it's too late.
Oh my god.
Yeah,
that
so
would have been fun.
I never
yeah.
prepare in advance
yeah.
for these things.
Right.
I always have to think in advance.
Man, Comic-Con is a huge deal too.
It really is. That's what I mean.
Yeah. Everybody wants to go there.
I know, but not me, because I don't know. I just, you know, I love conventions, but also the crowds make me crazy sometimes.
Yeah, it's not really my thing either.
And it's San Diego, and San Diego gets packed and stuff. And I mean, I went one time, couldn't even get close to the convention center, but that's not a reason not to go. I mean, look, it's all part of it. But and in the meantime, I got over all this, like, crowds and stuff. I can handle it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We went to the Festival of Books, I told you, right, with my daughter the other day.
Yeah, that's so great.
And I was glad to see it wasn't that packed. There were some people, which was encouraging. There's obviously people that like to read. But God knows it wasn't as packed as the cannabis cup that I try to go to.
Oh, my gosh. I know. I can't believe
that. I mean, there
that.
It's like people pack blocks and blocks of streets. Where here, it was easy to find parking and get to your seat.
For some reason, that doesn't surprise me.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you get more people to meet for pot than book lovers. I mean, what is
I know. I
funny.
Mean,
well,
to
I'm
be
both.
Fair, people are reading more books like online and stuff, but still.
Yeah, I mean, look, you get to, but that's the thing. You don't go out there to buy books necessarily, but more to talk to authors.
Right.
You know, things like that. I mean, we got to talk to some really cool people, creators of like comic books and stuff. This one guy, really creative, okay, did like really cool, I mean, he did like a few cool comic books, but original ones that he did. But then he made one that's about, do you see this monitor here? Bigger than that. It's like even wider than this. That's the size of the book, the comic book.
What?
It's about this thick, like an inch and a half thick.
Yeah.
Full color, beautiful. I think it goes for 75 or 100 bucks, which I would pay for something like that. I mean, it's like, they're saying it's the biggest comic book in that format.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But, excuse me, what they did, on some pages you can aim your phone or tablet, iPad, and it starts playing an animation that's related to what you're reading. So, for example, like, let's say you're reading something about a little fight that the superheroes are having. You point your iPad at it, you get a 3D animation of, like, their weapons and things.
No way.
Like that, yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
That's cool. But when you think about it, it's not that complicated because all you have to do is create the animation. And this is stuff that I used to do, like I said, 25 years ago, right. 3D animation.
So you just have to create an animation.
You create an animation. Exactly. And then you have to trigger it from the page. So I said, how do you do it? How do you trigger it? And he says, yeah, we used to have those ugly codes on there. But now they have like image recognition. So the program knows when you see that face on the page,
okay.
That's when you know.
Oh,
that's
very neat.
Yeah, that's how I figured it works. But it really is. It's very interactive. I think for younger people, it's amazing. Even for older people. I mean, it's an incredible experience. And I told them, I said, very creative. I realized it's obviously easy to do, but he came out with it first, or at least the first that I saw.
Yeah.
So it was pretty creative. But it's amazing what some people can do.
Yeah, did people seem really interested in it?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a big crowd.
But he was more interested in me, actually. I mean, because I showed interest. I told him about the radio show and everything. He's like, yeah, I'd love to come on.
Oh, maybe he'll come on. That'd
yeah.
be cool.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah. And my daughter was having a blast because she's trying to get into the comic book industry. And
oh, really?
We were meeting all these great people. She even knew some people there.
Oh, awesome.
So that's pretty cool. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, I mean, if you want things, you have to go out and get them. That's what I keep saying, you know. Things don't fall in your lap. They don't come to you. Sometimes they do. Then you consider yourself extremely lucky and fortunate
yeah.
and blessed, right? But for the most part, most of us have to work hard for what we have. You have to believe that you can do it, you know, and mm-hmm. that's what he did. I mean, John Finch, you know, I think his message is if you want to do something, you don't need a team, you don't need a lot of money, just go out and do it, you know. I mean, look at this radio station, you know. I mean, we could have been bigger if I tried to raise a lot of money and stuff like that, but that's not what I wanted, you know.
Right.
I want something more intimate, you know, not something like a Facebook for radio or something, you know.
Exactly.
For millions of people. So, yeah, so that's that. What else? We were talking about the Porsche before.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you remember where we left off there on the Porsche?
Yeah, so I was
you did ride?
We did.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, I do the whole presenting thing in
right.
one section. And
okay.
then, yeah, and then another part was just B-roll, which is essentially, you know what that is. It's essentially
right.
like...
While you're talking in the background, they're showing different action? Or?
No, it's of us. Like, it was me and a male actor.
Right.
And so, yeah, we were just doing various things, like meeting the dealer, getting our car inspected, you know,
right.
things like
yeah.
that, looking at...
But no action scenes of you driving in the
we
car.
We did. Yeah,
really?
That was one of the B-roll scenes. Yeah.
Really?
And so
they had
actually,
cameras attached to the car and everything?
They didn't. They just filmed from the outside.
Oh, from the outside.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Cool.
But, so basically we got to drive a 911 coupe convertible and
yeah,
yeah
the best
I got to drive it, which was
really
fun. I know.
Whoa.
And so yeah, it was so funny because
cool.
the first take we did, you know, they told me to drive and they only needed me to drive like 20 or 30 feet or whatever. And I like looped around and I was like, you know, trying to find a way to turn around so I could position it correctly. But I couldn't find it and I was backing up. And the next time they were like, just drive 20 feet and back up. I was like, I'm not going to steal your car.
Yeah,
relax.
Don't do it. Yeah, don't creative aerobatics here.
I know. But it was fun.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, that's it, folks, for today. Stay tuned for State of the Oceans coming right here, right after us. An amazing show. If you guys are into environment, whales,
cool.
Yeah, dolphins, they talk about saving all these wildlife in the oceans. Very interesting show. So stay tuned right here. Also in the other on the other channel, if you prefer, you can listen to Peace Fund, which is also pretty cool. Ethan and Adrian Paul are doing the show there, and that's amazing. They do a lot of great things for kids and for people. So yeah, if I can promote that, why not? Anyway, have a happy Wednesday, everyone. Kelsey, thank you.
Yes,
and,
of course.
And thanks, everybody, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
Bye, guys.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.